Okay, so I'm talking to an empty room, but I know I'm not talking to an empty room. I know we've got lots of people watching, and we're gonna do this together, not physically, but collectively, all together. So welcome to week 7. This is the Thursday morning class, the part of a series, which I'm just gonna turn on this recorder. Here we are. Which week 7 of the series called No Worries, where we've been talking about thinking positively and dealing with anxiety, anxious and negative thinking. So today is a continuation of a series, but it's a special focus on the current challenge, the coronavirus outbreak, especially in the last few days. Some schools have closed, shuls have closed, organizations have closed. It's certainly an unsettling time. It's certainly a little bit of an anxious time. And in that context, what we're going to do today is really, really more of a practical discussion rather than a theoretical one. So as we've been talking about and discussing with many of you, we need to be strong. We need to strengthen each other. I'm just going to check with my technician over here that everything's okay. Good, fantastic, thank you. And today we're going to actually focus on using strategies connected with mindfulness, Jewish mindfulness, from a Jewish perspective. We've spoken about mindfulness in the past, but today we're going to talk about it in today's context. We're going to revisit the concept of mindfulness and tie it in to really using it in order to strengthen ourselves, inspire ourselves, stay strong in the context of what we're going through at the moment. But what I want to do first is just run you through a very quick summary of where we've been till now in the series. So for the first number of weeks, we talked about Jewish ideas, but we also based it on a book called Change Your Thinking by Sarah Edelman, which is a book that shares ideas of cognitive behavioral therapy, CBT, to do with some of this negative thinking. And we talked a lot bit about happiness and about productive thinking, productive functioning, and what stands in the way of that productive thinking. So for example, the concept of rumination. We have thoughts, negative thoughts that ruminate, whether it's stress, whether it's anxious thinking, whether it's judgment of others, whether it's jealousy, and it stays in our mind and it sort of prevents and hinders the normal functioning of the way we're supposed to go ahead each day and be productive. So we began with things that happened in the past. So something happens. We have an emotional response. For example, someone cuts us off in traffic, we lost our wallet, someone offended us, we explode, we exaggerate, why does this happen? It's a catastrophe, it's a disaster, people should never do that, everyone should do the right thing, people should drive responsibly, and so on and so forth, and we stress, and sometimes if it's a relationship issue particularly, we ruminate, or if it's a stressful situation in the office, then we tend to, for days and days, ruminate and have this thinking in our mind. So we talked about the concept that we have to change it, and the essence of what we discussed over the weeks is that the strategy is really to dispute our thinking. In other words, the problem is the emotion, but it's the thinking and the action, the behavior, that control our emotion. So if we want to channel our emotion into more of a positive sort of thing, then we have to dispute the way we think and the way we act. So we work from both sides. So we talked about everything that happens when we respond. So what happens is the situation happens, that cannot be changed. The person cut us off, the person didn't do what they were supposed to in the office, whatever the case might be. The situation is the situation, you cannot change the situation. But we can change our beliefs, we can dispute our thinking. So we talked about a thinking monitoring sheet, we talked about how you dispute your thinking, and essentially all we discussed is this, that something happens, then we have direct thinking. We think it's terrible, we scream at the person, we stress, we ruminate on the thoughts, but then we have to realize what is the belief behind it, so we dispute those beliefs. So we have the conscious beliefs, things like things should always go right, things should always turn out the way they should be, things people should always do the right thing. We have to dispute those things, those thinking patterns. It's not true, things do happen, things go off course, look what's happening in the world now, we don't control things, and we have to dispute those thinking and help it for us to calm down. But then we talked about, from a Jewish perspective, disputing the deeper thinking. In other words, the faulty thinking on a deeper level is that I'm in control, that If something goes wrong, then it's a wasted day because not everything happens for a reason. What was supposed to happen didn't happen, and therefore something else happens. That's a total waste of time because I don't believe that really that it happened b'hashgacha pratit, it happened by God's divine plan, and therefore it's got meaning and purpose. So we have to dispute those beliefs and start to think in terms of everything that happens has a meaning. Everything has a purpose. The purpose isn't always what we think it's supposed to do. The purpose could be something different. So therefore, if I lost my wallet and I can't go shopping, I need to know that there's a purpose in that. It's difficult, it's painful, but at the same time, I can give it meaning and purpose. I can stay calm, I can do something productive, I can go out with a friend because I can't go to work, or whatever the case is, the idea of hashgacha pratit, everything happens by God, everything I cannot control, but I can control my response. Everything has a purpose. We're not always aware of the purpose, but we can try and make the experience as meaningful as possible. That's the essence of what we spoke about the first few weeks. Now, last week, we took the discussion specifically to the concept of worrying and anxiety, which is much more complicated, because when we're disputing our thinking with something that's got to do with happened yesterday or happened in the past or happened this morning, I know what happened, I know how I responded, I need to train myself to be conscious of my beliefs, identify what is the faulty beliefs and thinking patterns that are leading to my response, and I can dispute them. Worry is much more complicated because it's about something in the future, and it's a bit unknown, so it's a bit more difficult. We can use the strategies that we talked about, but we need to do something more. Now, when we have anxious thoughts, which comes often from worrying, anxiety, and I always make this disclaimer, I'm talking about anxiety with a small a. Sometimes anxiety can develop into a real disorder, in which case the strategies are also good, but we need to seek professional intervention. But anxiety clogs up our thinking. In other words, anxiety doesn't let us function properly. It paralyzes us. And therefore, we really need to address it and try to get it under control. So last week, we talked about two types of worry. Two types of worry. Worrying about something that has a basis. So for example, someone is unwell and we're worried about what's going to be. Some of the worry now has a basis. We're worried about, is our elder loved ones going to catch coronavirus, God forbid? Are people in danger? How long is this going to go on for? It's a real thing. How long is it going to take? That's good worry. Now, in those areas of worry, concern and caution is really good. Worrying is out of our control and worrying is still destructive, but at least the worrying has a basis. But then we talked about worrying that's different, completely imaginary worry, meaning from imaginary threats, right? So for example, we make up stuff that's over-dramatized and over-exaggerated, and it's something they call speculative worrying. So the example I gave you last week is a guy that hates going to the dentist, and he hasn't had a dental checkup for 15 years, and his wife threatened to divorce him, so he finally made an appointment. And he was worrying about the terrible pain and what's going to happen and the effects that's going to happen for weeks and weeks and weeks, which was completely out of proportion and had no basis, because the statistics are that most people that go to the dentist survive and are fine 99.9% of the time. There's really nothing to worry about. But he was, and then when he got to the dentist, he was so anxious, he was over anxious, and then he had a bit of discomfort from the drill, nothing much from the injection, and it was certainly much less than the anxiety and the pain and the suffering that he had for those 3 weeks. So that's kind of over-dramatized, imaginary, speculative worrying, which is really destructive and really bad. Now, what we said last week, before we get to mindfulness, is that the strategy is on two levels. First of all, we have to base the strategy on sort of like a more psychological kind of view, and then from a Jewish point of view, to take it even deeper. So we said that really it depends what the worry is. In other words, I shared with you that in psychological thinking, I use two models. One is cognitive behavioral therapy, which we've been talking about over the last few weeks. The other one is ACT, acceptance commitment therapy, which is very different. So CBT is very much about disputing our thoughts, as we've been talking about. ACT is more about accepting our thoughts and just trying to put it on the side. I know I have the thought, I'm not disputing it, I'm just going to ignore it. Now, I think when it comes to worrying, so it depends what the worry is based on. If the worry is based on a belief, then we dispute it. We have to dispute the belief. So if the worry is based on, I'm really worried about public speaking because I'm worried about what someone's going to think about me, So I need to dispute that. Why am I worried about it? Do I define myself on the identity, on the approval of others? Is that my identity? I need to know that I've got intrinsic value. If I'm worrying about something, you know, being late for an appointment because I think the doctor's going to think I'm a terrible person, I need to dispute that. I know the doctor's not going to think that, and most of the time we're fine with it, and I just need to call ahead and be responsible and say I'm running late, and so on and so forth. But when the worrying is not based on a belief, it's just worrying 3 months about a dentist appointment, worrying about terrible things that will happen, or the example I gave you last week about when someone is a child or our spouse is outside and is late for coming home and he's 10 minutes late, to start right away thinking, oh, it must have been an accident or it must have been a terrible thing happening, which is ridiculous because it could happen. It's not like it's impossible, but it's very unlikely. They got distracted, they got stopped by someone or whatever the case is. Then perhaps it's better to exercise the concept of, I have this thought, I just need to distract myself from it. I need to ignore it. It's called what we call in Hebrew, hesach hadas. And the way we do that is we replace it with another thinking. We replace it with more positive thinking. We replace it with something else, as we discussed last week. And then, of course, the second thing, and this will lead us into today's discussion, is the concept of emunah and bitachon. And we talked about something we need now so strongly. So emunah and bitachon, emunah means faith. Faith, by definition, means we believe in God and we accept things even though we don't understand them. And then bitachon means trusting, giving it over to God, letting him run the show, and trusting it's going to be good. Difficult things, because sometimes we know good things don't happen. But nevertheless, the concept is that the more we positively think, the more we trust in God, the more we give us our lives and surrender to God. We quoted the pasuk, the verse last week, V'habotayach b'Hashem. Someone who trusts God, chesed yisovevenu. The trusting itself in God brings kindness. The calming down, being calm and giving ourselves over, letting God run the show, just controlling our responses, that in itself brings the bracha, the blessing, particularly in the context of a very Jewish idea, which is of course a very modern idea as well, that as one great Hasidic Rebbe put it, tracht gut vet zayn gut, think good and it's going to be good. Positive thinking itself brings positivity. So it's a hard thing, because when something happens, even like now for example, we need to be concerned, we need to take the cautious steps, and we should. It's a serious thing and we need to take it seriously. We need to do what we can. I'm going to talk about this a bit more soon. But at the same time, we have to try and get rid of the fear, try and get rid of the worry. Now, that leads us into today's topic. So part of the strategy, part of letting go of the worry, part of disputing our thinking, part of not letting our negative thoughts ruminate, whether through disputing our thoughts or ignoring our thoughts, all of those things, part of that is very much enhanced and will be much more effective if we learn the art of being mindful, which brings us back to revisit concept of mindfulness. So mindfulness, as I said to you many, many times, is a very Jewish concept. I know some people think that a couple of thousand years ago the Buddhists discovered it. Way before that, it's in the Torah, it's in the commentary, it's in the Talmud. Very, very, very important concept. We have the idea of living and making the best of every moment. We have the idea of kavanah. Kavanah means to distract ourselves from every other thing and pay attention and direct our thoughts to be very, very focused. A very, very Jewish idea on many, many levels. So the concept of mindfulness has become a very, very talked about topic, in particular the last 20 years, where it's been transferred from a sort of Eastern concept to a more scientific application and used in a purely scientific clinical context, being very, very beneficial to many, many people. Now, we know that mindfulness has a lot of benefits, and we'll talk about what mindfulness is in a minute, but it increases our awareness of what's going on in our mind. It helps us think clearer with a bigger focus. It takes away the concept of ruminating and worrying, because when we focus on the moment and we live in the moment, we can disband it. We can get rid of things that are distracting, that have to do with yesterday or tomorrow. Through that, we're able to regulate our emotion because we're very focused and we're channeling what we feel into the present moment. It helps us pay attention. A difficult thing to do, we've spoken about this many times, because today it's a fast-moving world, today it's a very distracted world, today we're all over the place in a very fast treadmill, so learning to be mindful is actually very difficult, but critical. Because it really, if we talk about managing anxious thinking, if we talk about managing worry, managing negative thinking, mindfulness, being in the moment, particularly from a Jewish perspective, is unbelievably effective and unbelievably critical. So let's develop this. First of all, let's remember and let's try and revisit what is mindfulness. So essentially, mindfulness, as they call it today, is paying attention on purpose. In other words, it's being in the moment, paying attention to the present moment, being aware of what is happening at the present moment, and being fully present. Being fully present and being fully present with making the most and maximizing the potential of the now. That's what mindfulness is. Now, in modern mindfulness literature, they talk about being present in the moment without judgment. What does that mean? And this is so relevant to what we're going through now. Because without judgment means that we don't judge the experience of now. In other words, like this, sometimes a person can pay attention to the moment, be fully in the moment, but he's got preconceived notions about what that moment is. So for example, we can be in the moment now as we go through this challenge of being isolated and being separate and worrying about the virus and so on and so forth, but we bring with it all our preconceived notions, and for some of us that might be negative. So therefore, it's hard to be in the moment positively, hard to make the most of the moment, because we're coming into the moment judging the moment, if that makes sense. Normally at this point I would stop and say to everyone, am I making sense? But you can't answer that question, so I hope I'm making sense. But being in the moment means, I'm going to give you a simple example. So you go into a meeting and you want to be fully focused in the meeting, but let's say you go into a meeting and you judging the meeting, so you think, oh, this meeting's not going to work, and that guy in the meeting anyway, his ideas are always stupid and he's always negative, then you've already clouded the now by the past. You judge the now, right? And that's a problem, because mindfulness really means to be fully in the moment without judgment. In other words, to be open-minded. This is the moment I can fully maximize in a positive and meaningful way. Now that leads us into Jewish mindfulness, and I'm doing this briefly because we once spent a lot of time on this, but this is the idea. So in a Jewish context, we're here for a purpose. We're not here by accident. We're not here just to enjoy life. We're here to give meaning and purpose. That's the essence of it. We've talked about a couple of weeks ago, meaning and purpose is what brings happiness, brings calmness. Viktor Frankl spoke about this. So much modern literature talks about this as well. But from a Torah perspective, God gave us a moral compass, the Torah. He gave us ways to do mitzvot between man and man, between man and God, and generally to have a mindset of living a life of meaning and purpose. Which means that mindfulness then means that in every moment, I'm just not aware, it's not good enough just to be aware of the moment. It's not good enough just to be fully aware and maximizing the superficiality of the moment. Right? It's deeper. Jewish mindfulness means tapping into and being conscious and understanding the depth of the moment, the soul of the moment. I've talked to you many times about this, that for example, in mindfulness, they talk about being aware of your breath, because that's something we normally take for granted, we're not aware of it. So one of the ways you do mindfulness training is to become, just to pay attention to your breathing. In a Jewish way, it's not just to pay attention to your breathing, it's to pay attention to what your breathing represents. We've talked about this many times, that the word for breath in Hebrew is neshima, which is the same word as neshama, the soul. It's about being aware of the soul which is manifested in our breathing. It's about tapping into the soul which yearns to give the moment meaning and purpose. In other words, Jewish mindfulness means I'm in this moment, I know this is a moment that is new and fresh. One of the concepts of mindfulness is what they call the beginner's mind, that every moment is fresh. From a Jewish point of view, that's so critical, because we are told that God renews the creation every moment. So every moment is fresh. I want to be fully in this moment, maximize this moment, but tap into the soul of the moment, which means I want to make sure that I give this moment the best meaning and purpose from a divine, spiritual, godly, meaningful, purposeful context the best way that I can. Because every moment is an end in itself. You see, one of the fundamental Jewish concepts is there's no such thing as a means to an end. Normally when you get into a car and you go to an appointment, so the drive there is a means to an end, it's a necessary evil, for example. If I waste a half a day on a plumber coming to my house, it's a necessary evil. In Jewish perspective, that doesn't exist. Every moment, now's the moment. If I'm driving in a car, if I'm wasting time with a plumber at home, this is the moment that this is the way I've got to serve God now. This is the way I've got to be a better person. This is the moment I've got to give meaning and purpose. This is my mission and purpose now. That's a whole nother level to the concept of mindfulness. So let's take that idea and develop it and particularly apply it to what's going on now. So let's break it up into three parts. In order to be mindful, to put it very simply in a simple formula, in order to live in the moment, it takes three parts. It's number one, letting go of the baggage of the past. By doing that, I'm able to be in the moment. But it also takes the third thing, which is letting go of the worries of the future. So let's develop and unpack what that looks like in terms of, particularly in terms of general living, but in terms of what's going on at the moment. Part of the difficulty, part of the unsettledness, sort of, if that's a word, of what's going on at the moment, part of why people are uneasy and really sort of unsettled a lot of the time, is because we're adjusting to a new, hopefully very temporary, but a new reality. We have expectations. We all have expectations, good expectations, legitimate expectations. I have an expectation of this Shabbat going to shul, but I'm not going to be able to. We have expectation of doing the things we used to, socializing with the people in the way we do, interacting with people the way we do, shaking their hands, hugging them, whatever the case is. Right? We have expectations of social settings, of conveniences that we used to, freedoms that we used to, all good stuff, not unreasonable expectations, good expectations. They're just not happening today. Today it's different. Today's a different day. For me to be in the moment, I have to let go of that past. I have to understand that today's creation, today's world, to this morning's world, things are different. Things are different, and they obviously have to be different. Nothing happens, even though they might be negative. We don't understand why they happen. We don't understand why God lets things happen. But this is right now God's will. We need to pray that it goes away very quickly so we can able to do the things which we know we're supposed to do. But right now, this is the world that we have today. And therefore, this is the world that we're supposed to have today. Yes, I can't go to shul. Yes, I couldn't dhamma with a minyan today. Yes, I can't do the things I like to do, even some of the spiritual things I like to do. That means I'm not meant to do that way. I'm supposed to do it differently. It's a different world today. I'm going to let go of yesterday's expectations, even though they're good expectations, and even though I have those hopes that it's going to come back to that, and we should, and that's fine. Today's a new day. Every day is special. Today I have a special mission. Today I have the ability to be fully in the moment, to maximize this day in a positive, purposeful, meaningful way, even though it's so different to yesterday. But if I keep hanging on to, why can't I do what I did last week? Why can't I socialize like I did last week? We can't be mindful. So the first step is we've got to let go for now. Almost say goodbye, temporarily, but goodbye for the moment, to the expectations of the things that we normally do, so that we can be fully in this moment. I'm going to tell you a story I've told you before, but I'm going to tell the story again because it's the most beautiful story. There were two great Hasidic rabbis called Reb Zusha and Reb Elimelech. Reb Zusha of Anipoli, Reb Elimelech of Lizhensk. You know, this is going back a few hundred years ago. They were the time of the way they were disciples of the Magid of Mizritch, who was a disciple of the holy Baal Shem Tov. And they were two great Hasidic rebbes, and they were brothers. One of the things they would do is they would travel around and they would collect money for what they called pidyon shvuyim, to redeem people from incarceration. Because in that time, they lived under a very brutal, negative, cruel regime, who would often just take people out of anti-Semitism or whatever the case is and throw them in jail, and then demand a ransom, and they would try and release them. One time they were traveling, and somehow they came in touch with the authorities, and the authorities decided they were doing the wrong thing, arrested them, and threw them into a cell. They arrived in the cell, and they were in a cell, not a very sanitary cell, not a very great place, but with a bunch of people who were lowlifes, thieves, murderers, all in the same cell. I'm trying to say the next part of the story in the most refined way that I can, but it's an important part of the story. So the facilities of the cell weren't very sophisticated, and part of what happened is that there was this bucket in the middle of the cell where people would use to do their thing, to relieve themselves, and that was the situation. Suddenly, Reb Elimelech looks at his brother, Reb Zusha, and Reb Zusha is sad. Elimelech says to him, "How can you be? Why are you sad?" So Reb Zusha says, "What do you mean, why I'm sad? Don't you see? Don't you see what's in the middle of the room? Do you know that in Shulchan Aruch, in the code of Jewish law, it says that you're not allowed to daven, you cannot pray to God, you cannot learn Torah if you're in the presence of such a bucket? If you're in the presence in that kind of environment, it's actually forbidden to do things that are holy. It's forbidden to pray. It's forbidden to learn Torah. It's forbidden to say things that are holy. I'm so down," because their whole life was about divine connection. The whole life was about praying to God, learning Torah. He says, "And now I can't do it. I mean, I don't need a sidur. I can do it by heart, but I'm not allowed to. I'm down. Why can't I daven? Why can't I learn?" Reb Elimelech looks at his brother and he says, "Reb Zusha, what are you talking about? Why do you daven? Why do you pray? Why do you learn? Because that's what God wants, right? But God, the same God who told you yesterday that you need to pray, the same God that said you have to make a blessing, the same God that said you have to learn, that God tells you that now you serve Him by not praying. Now you serve Him by not learning. Now you serve Him by not making the blessing." Reb Zusha looks up and he says, "Hey, my brother, you're right. You're absolutely right. And we have to serve God with joy." So they both got up. You can imagine the spectacle. And they started to dance. They started to sing a lively tune. And they started to dance and dance and dance. You know, and what happens is, dancing, joy is contagious. So what happens is, all these murderers, the thieves, these lowlifes that were in the cell with them, they saw them dancing. They were down. They were bored. They were irritable. They got up and they joined the dance, and it became a whole dance in the cell. Suddenly there's a loud knock at the door, and the guards barge in and they say, "What is going on here? What's the joy about? What are you enjoying yourself? What are you doing?" So one of the Cossacks, one of the guys, one of the prisoners turns to them and says, "Look, we actually don't know. We just know these two guys started dancing, so we all started dancing. We're not sure why they're dancing. It's got something to do We don't know what, it's got something to do with the bucket in the middle of the room." So the guards got really angry and they said, "Yes, okay, we'll take that away also. Come along," they march to the bucket, pick it up, take it out, "and you're going to have to suffer for a while. If you need something, you'll tell us, but no more bucket." Suddenly, Reb Zusha turns to his brother and he says, "Hey, did you see what just happened? There's no bucket. We can pray, we can daven, we can learn." And they start to dance again. And there's a whole dancing going on again, obviously to the confusion of the gods. Such an important story, this. Why? Because we have a routine. We have the things we normally do, whether it's mitzvot, whether it's davening or learning, whether it's the way we normally help people by interacting with them physically, whether it's the relationships that we normally do, whether it's working to earn a living, which is also a mitzvah, in a particular setting, in a particular way. We do things with meaning and value, and our values dictate how we do them in a normal way. And then suddenly everything changes. Then suddenly it's a new day. Then suddenly we can't come to the shir physically. We can't learn the normal way. We can't go to shul the Shabbat. We can't help people by going to pick them up. We can't hug someone who's maybe not feeling that great. We can't do any of that. And we start to be down. Why? Because we're hanging on to the values of yesterday. We're hanging on to the routines of yesterday. We're hanging on to the expectations of yesterday. We say goodbye to the expectations of yesterday. We say, today, this is a new moment. This is a moment where we have to now make the full potential. We have to maximize the full potential, because if we woke up this morning, this day counts. It's not a wasted day. This day counts. This is a day that we can give meaning and purpose. We can serve God. We can make ourselves better people. We can make the world a better place, just in a different way. The same God, the same values that told us how to do it yesterday, tell us today we've got to still do it, but differently. So part of being mindful, therefore, is to do that. Today we've got to make the best of what we can. So we log into a computer to watch the shiur. We call someone instead of hugging someone. We make sure that someone is cared for. We make sure that an elderly person who's in isolation has their needs taken care of. There's so much we can do. We spend more time with our children. Our children are at home, many of them. Our grandchildren are at home, many of them. We can drive each other crazy. I mean, being stuck in the house with your family is great news for some, bad news for others. But this is an opportunity. It's a pain in the neck. It'll go away very soon, but right now it's an opportunity. Right now what we can do is, we can make the best of it. We can learn how to strengthen our relationships with our partners, with our spouses, and with our children and our siblings. We can make things happen. We can spend more time, better time than we haven't spent. We can make something meaningful. We can play games with them. We can learn with them. We can connect with them. We can bond with them in ways that maybe we don't normally do. Whatever it is, each person will make that decision themselves. But the values are the same, just not the same as yesterday. Today there's a bucket, so we do it differently. We have to just do it in a completely different way. You know, I don't know if you saw the videos going around, but there's so many different memes and videos and jokes, which are also good, by the way. You got to give a bit of humor to the situation. But there's a beautiful chuppah that I saw. I shared it on Facebook. Some of you might have seen it, of a chuppah taking place in Israel, very carefully adhering to the restrictions. Only like 10 people around the chuppah, immediate family, but there's balconies all around and rooftops where people are coming out and joining in. I've never seen such joy in a chuppah. There's different ways to make joy. Sometimes you can have 1,000 people at a chuppah and it's flat. This was a chuppah with very, very few people, but people from a distance, just singing, dancing, really feeling for each other. Same value, just a different way. Making the best of the moment, not having long faces and complaining why it couldn't be the way it's supposed to be, but actually turning it into something even more special. What a way to do that. We can do chesed now, we can do kindness, we can work on our personality. But being cramped in with people, we can do so much now to bring meaning and purpose to the day. We just have to do that. We just have to rechannel of how we're doing something. We have to wake up in the morning and say, how can I make the best of now? How can I make the best of today? How can I make today meaningful and purposeful? But another very, very important part of mindfulness, this is particularly relevant to this, is letting go of the future. Now, what does that mean? Something we once discussed is that from a Jewish point of view, it is not true to say that this moment is the only moment, because our mission statement for life involves learning from the past, and it also involves consideration for the future. As I've said many times, we need to live in the moment, but not for the moment, because we don't live for the moment. We live to make the world a better place. We live to serve God. We live so that we can become better people. And we live in a way where what we do now will impact what happens tomorrow. So, in fact, Pirkei Avot tells us, Ezehu Chacham, who is a wise person, Haro'eh et Hanolad, someone who considers the consequences of the now. So we cannot divorce the future. And that is true on all levels. If someone is unwell, the very cautionary strategies that we're taking now of social distancing and hygiene and isolation and so on and so forth is because we're worried about the future. And that's okay, that's good. But we know, of course, as we've been talking about, that letting go of the future means letting go of the things in the future which we cannot control. In other words, when Pirkei Avot says that who is a wise person, Haro'eh et Hanolad, there's a very careful wording there. Let me explain it to you. The future, normally the word for future in Hebrew is atid, future. The Pirkei Avot doesn't say who is a wise person who considers the future. No. It says, Haro'eh et hanolad. He considers that which will be born out of now. In other words, my mission is now. And I can control my response to the now. And part of my response to the now means that I do whatever I can now that's in my control that will perhaps have a positive effect on the future. So if someone is unwell, I call a doctor. If someone is unwell, I take safety precautions. If there's a virus that's broke out, we listen to the authorities, we listen to the recommendations of experts, and we do take steps to ensure the future. And then let go of everything else. We let go of the panic. In other words, we have to be cautious but not worried. We have to be concerned but not panicked. And I want to pause here and share with you an amazing thing. Some of you might have heard it from me already because I've repeated it a few times in the last week at some of the one or two of the other shiurim. But about 130 years ago, there was a great Sephardic sage called the Ben Ish Chai. And the Ben Ish Chai lived in Baghdad, and at that time there was a huge Jewish community, and he was the undisputed leader, was a great man. And he passed away in 1902. The Ben Ish Chai has a commentary on the Talmud called the Ben Yehoyada. In a particular place in the tractate, he says the following. The context is, the Talmud is actually talking about a plague that comes to a city. In the Talmud, by the way, in early literature, I mean, there was often epidemics and pandemics and so on. So the Talmud says, if a plague comes to the city, there's two strategies. One is to run away from the city, which obviously we can't do now. There's no way to run. Or, kanes raglecha, quarantine, stay in your house. Says the Ben Ish Chai, that in certain circumstances, even if running away doesn't help, it's still good to run away. Or, even if quarantine doesn't help, it's still good to do that. Why? And he says, because there's something that is much worse than the plague itself, and that is the panic. And in his style, he says the following. He says, doctors like to illustrate this point by telling a story. It's a mashal, it's not a true story, it's a parable. But he says, this is what doctors say. It's an amazing mental health thought, by the way, which he said over 130 years ago, which of course today in modern science is very, very common thinking, and it's very, very sort of being proven and applied. He says, doctors tell a story that there was once a plague, a cholera plague in a city, and someone in the city, one of the leaders of the city, met the angel, the malach, the mashchis, the angel of death, the negative angel that God had sent to administer the plague. And this guy said to that malach, and he said, tell me, how many people are you planning to take through this plague? Very morbid question. And I'm just quoting from the Ben Ish Chai, and he says, the malach answered, the angel answered, 5,000. At the end of the whole story, after the plague was gone, there were much more casualties. There was 15,000. That's the story that they tell. And then this leader was walking the street, and once again he met the malach, he met this angel, and he said to him, Lama shikarta, why did you lie to me? You said 5,000 and it was 15,000. And the doctors tell the story that the mashris, the angel, answered the following. He said, no, I did not lie. My sword, the sword that I was given to carry out this mission, so to speak, unfortunately, only took 5,000 people. But the panic, the anxiety, the pachad, as he called this, the fear took the rest. And that's why he says, you've got to isolate yourself. Even if isolation doesn't always help, but he says, you won't hear what's going on. You won't be part of the panic. I like this. I think in the modern context, it means maybe checking our iPhones a little bit less, checking the social media a little bit less. We have to check a little bit to be up to date with what's going on, but maybe not checking every 5 minutes. Check it less, focus on better things. We need to find that balance between concern, caution, taking it seriously, which unfortunately some people still aren't. I was walking down Bondi Road yesterday, saw a whole bunch of young people, maybe tourists, I don't know what they were, huddling together, socializing together, not practicing the appropriate cautionary. It's irresponsible. It's selfish because maybe they're young and strong and think they won't be affected. And if they do, won't be very bad, but they might affect others. It's irresponsible. We have a responsibility to our own health. Protecting our own health is a mitzvah. It's a mitzvah to protect our own health and the health of others. But part of protecting our health is to calm down, to calm everyone else down, not to bring in pachad, to be in the moment, to focus on the now. What can I do now? What can I do now is part of also being responsible. But to learn about bitachon, to integrate and internalize, God runs the world. He will take us through this. We'll do what we can. We'll think positively. We'll bring the blessing. But He will take us through. Let Him run the world. Panicking in unproductive ways, being anxious in ways which we cannot control anyways, we all do this to a certain extent. We should beat ourselves up, but we need to work on letting go of the worry of the future. Not caring, just letting go of the worry of the future so we remove that anxiety. How do we do that? We do that by practicing to be mindful. By waking up every single day and say, yesterday was yesterday. The value system of yesterday dictated that I do things in a particular way. The same value system, I need to re-ask the question, how do I apply that value system today? How do I make today positive, uplifting, inspiring, meaningful, purposeful, spiritual, and in line with my life values and fulfilling my mission? I'm going to do that, focus on that, and let the worry of the future go. Now, we know that mindfulness takes practice. It's not easy. But it's so critical to this process. So, we have meditation exercises where we learn to focus for a few minutes. But of course, the meditation is not mindfulness. Mindfulness is not about meditation. Meditation is just like exercise. Mindfulness is about the rest of the day. It's about living mindfully every single moment. By every single hour, every single minute, saying, how do I maximize this moment in the most positive and purposeful way? But it does need practice. So we need to spend a few minutes every single day practicing. It's not an easy time. You see, mindfulness doesn't mean that we make everything happy. No. One of the modern day leading mindfulness writers, John Kabat-Zinn, talks about this, and he says, mindfulness is not about removing the pain. It's about giving meaning to the present. So the challenge continues, but we can make it even more stronger than before. So I want to suggest something before we finish. And that is, from a Jewish point of view, we've talked about what that means now. We need to maybe commit every single day, this is a good idea anyway, but particularly during this time. People wake up, and I've heard from other people, they wake up in the morning, and as soon as they wake up, after a few moments, it hits them that they've woken up, and another day of this time, they start to feel anxious. We also know, we've talked about this before, the Zohar tells us that the first part of the day has a very big impact on the rest of the day. So this is a suggestion. Let's wake up every morning and practice mindfulness for a bit. In other words, sit in our bed, just remember that we've woken up alive. Hopefully we're woken up healthy. Let's practice a small meditation. Perhaps close your eyes, perhaps just think a little bit, maybe a little bit later in the day, whatever the case is. Turn your attention to your breathing, feel your breathing, feel that you're alive, and that feel the neshama, the soul behind the breath. Remember that we're in God's hands. Remember that God gave us back our soul. Remember that it's a new day, a different day, but a new day. And let's say, Mordei Ani Lefanecha. The Mordei Ani, the first prayer in the Siddur. But just not saying it by rote, say it with feeling. Mordei Ani Lefanecha, I thankfully acknowledge. Lefanecha, before you, God. In other words, I'm in your hands. I know that you've given me this day. I know this day is a day that I can be fully positive. I can make this day great. Melech kech chai v'kayim, because you're an eternal God. You're infinite. You've given me infinite powers. B'chemla, you've given me compassion. And finally, as we've talked about before in the past, Rabba emunatecha, great is your faith. And as we've talked about, the commentaries tell us, it doesn't only mean great is our faith in you, but great is your faith in us. God believes in us. He believes in us that we can wake up in this challenge and we can make every day count. We can make our relationship stronger. We can make every day more meaningful. and just carrying on. Bina, by the way, is not closing. Physically we are. We're not closing. All the shurim are going to be online, different ways to tune into them, and we're going to send out emails. But this is a time, don't stop learning. Learn more. Make it positive by getting other people to learn. Invite someone else to join the shiur, showing them the link and showing them how they can tune in online or whatever the case is. Pray every day. Pray for ourselves. Pray for those who have the coronavirus, especially those that are hospitalized. They should have a refuah shlema. But bring joy, bring faith, bring strength. Do it by starting the day right. By getting up in the morning and saying, this is a day that I'm going to make unbelievable. I can't see people, I'm going to call them. I can't hug someone, I'm going to give them a virtual hug. I'm going to find out how they are. I'm going to get on with my family. I'm going to do something spiritual. I'm going to do a mitzvah that I haven't done before. I'm going to come out of this whole thing so much more stronger because I'm going to make now count. I'm going to be in the moment. I'm not going to worry about the expectations of last week. I'm going to try and get rid of the anxiety and the fear of the future because I'm going to focus fully. I'm going to turn my attention to what can I do now? How can I make this moment count? And I'm going to do it by starting the day, by relaxing, by being focused on who I am, by remembering that I'm alive, paying my attention to my breathing, and remembering that the neshama, the soul, the neshama is manifested in the neshima. And I'm going to thank God for that. I'm going to start the day by Modeh Ani Lefanecha Melech Chai V'Kayam. I thankfully acknowledge you, God, Eternal God, Shechzarta Binishmati. You've given back my soul, fresh, ready to go, ready to make this day count. B'Chemla, with great compassion, Rabba Amunatecha. I know you believe in me, therefore I should believe in myself. I should believe in myself, that I don't have to panic. I know you're going to take us through this. I don't have to be anxious. I know I can make the now count. I know it's going to be okay, and I know I'm going to help others lift myself up, lift everyone else up. And you know something? We need to lift each other up. We need to inspire each other now. We need to really stay unbelievably strong, positive, and happy. Simcha. And very, very soon, just like the story of Zusha and Rabbi Elimelech, dancing because I serve God in a bit of a different way, God will say, okay, I'll take away the bucket. So you can serve me like you always do. And very, very soon, I don't know how soon, let's hope very soon, but whatever it takes, we'll do the right thing. Next week, we'll do all the learning online. Next Thursday, we're going to have another session, by the way. We're going to do another session, which we'll sum this up. We'll talk more about this concept, perhaps connected to Pesach, which is coming up, a very important topic. But very, very soon, we're going to be back together. We're going to fill this room even fuller. We'll have to get more chairs, maybe. We're gonna just make it even stronger. We're gonna be back in shul. We're gonna celebrate together physically, do it the way we always do it. But for now, we're gonna do it the way we need to do it, and we're gonna come out even greater and stronger. Have a wonderful day, everyone. Have a wonderful week, and have a Shabbat Shalom. See you very soon again online. Have a great day.